It's nearly 3 o'clock. You're listening to KTOO News. I'm Ann Fuller, your host. Today on Juneau Afternoon, we'll find out how to become an outdoors woman. Jim Calvin from the McDowell Group will be here to discuss Juneau's economic plan. We'll talk to Mark Kelly and Nick Jans about their brand new book, Once Upon Alaska. Arthur Studler will be here with details about Friday's 10th anniversary Morally Improvised show at the 360 studio. Weather for tonight: mostly cloudy, chance of rain and snow. Rain and snow becoming all snow by late evening. Snow accumulation up to 3 inches, lows around 32. North wind 5 to 15.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Mohawk leaders in Quebec say they're likely to declare independence if a separatist party wins a third referendum on Quebec sovereignty. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the warning comes as the French-speaking province faces a provincial election.
People in Quebec go to the polls in less than a week in what's become a tight race. The Parti Québécois began the campaign talking about sovereignty, but has since backed off because of the reaction. But that was enough to cause anxiety among most voters who don't want a new referendum on separation. The territory of the Mohawks of Akwesasne straddles Quebec, Ontario, and part of New York State. It's one of 3 Mohawk reserves in Quebec. And Mohawk chiefs say if the Parti Québécois wins and then at some time holds a referendum on sovereignty, the Mohawks will hold their own vote on whether to separate from Quebec. Brian David is a chief from the Akwesasne First Nation.
Akwesasne was here before Quebec. We've been sitting on these lands far long before the Europeans ever came.
Others say they won't recognize the authority of Quebec separation. Quebec is home to more than 30 communities of Aboriginal people. There are more than 95,000 First Nations and Inuit in the province. Many, especially the Mohawk leaders, say they would never be part of a separate Quebec because their ties are to the land. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
New Mexico Congressman Steve Pierce has introduced legislation to reauthorize the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Act. As Tristan Autone reports, it could help with housing shortages in Indian Country.
It's no secret. Affordable, available housing in Indian Country is a problem. NAHASDA aims to help fix that problem by providing housing assistance to low-income tribal members.
Everyone should have a home, and so NAHASDA itself addresses that question.
That's New Mexico Congressman Steve Pierce. With funding for NAHASDA about to run out, he's introduced legislation to reauthorize the program with tweaks, faster approvals for applicants, and incentives for full ownership on reservation lands.
I believe that we can get different entities to come on and start building all the houses a tribe needs with no more appropriation. And in fact, the appropriation probably could diminish over a period of time, which would be a win-win situation.
NAHASDA expired in 2013. Reauthorization would provide funding until 2018. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autown.
The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is considering a handful of bills today in Washington, D.C., including one to create a commission to address challenges facing Native children. U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp introduced the bill. She'll discuss it with former U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan, who currently works on Native youth issues. The commission would conduct a study examining things like poverty, abuse, and few economic opportunities. It would also study programs, grants, and support available, and then issue a report. The legislation has bipartisan support. The Southern Ute Tribe is mourning the death of Chairman Jimmy Newton Jr. The 36-year-old passed away this week after a recent illness. He formerly served as vice chairman and council member. He's survived by his wife and daughter. The tribe will hold a special election to fill the vacancy. Until then, the vice chair will lead the Colorado tribe. In April 1910, Congress passed an act that forever waived tuition for Native American students at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado. It began as an Indian school operated by the federal government. Colorado received ownership of it in exchange for the tuition waiver. In recent years, efforts in the state have challenged the waiver. Fort Lewis officials have said the non-tribal institution is a leading school in graduating Native students with bachelor's degrees. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
My guests right now are from Becoming an Outdoors Woman, a workshop that's held here in Juneau. And hello, Michelle. You're one of the people who've been planning this, right?
Yes, I have been planning it. I've been doing it for quite a few years now, and we're excited. This is our sixth year in Southeast Alaska that we're holding Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshop. And so we're doing it again at Echo Ranch like we've done for the past few years. And we're hoping people are interested in participating again. The last few years, we've been filling up so fast in the last few weeks that we want to get the word out as quick as we can, because registration opened yesterday.
Ah, so registration opened April 1st, and there are two other people here, and they managed to get registered last year and went. Is that right, Christine?
Yeah, last year was my first year going last May, and I had a really great experience. So I thought I'd come on today and talk about my experience to get other women out there this year.
That's great. And also with us is Rebecca Parks.
Yep, and I had the same thing. Last year was my first year going, and I just loved it. As soon as I got home last year, I actually signed up to volunteer this year. I had such a good time. So
now this is great response from people who got to that workshop last year. So, Michelle, tell us about what this weekend is and who it's for.
Sure. So it's a three-day workshop, and the goal is to teach women outdoor skills and fishing and hunting skills. And so what we do is we have room for about 80 participants, and we have classes that are designed for women, and they're also designed for women who have never done any of these things before. So if you have never touched a fishing rod, no problem. You can come, and we will set you up with all the gear you need, and we'll teach you everything about the gear and how to use it. Same thing with our chainsaw class. I, for one, have never touched a chainsaw, and I would love to take that class. And, you know, the instruction is a really basic level. We cover safety is one of our main priorities. And, you know, we also want to have fun, but we're trying to teach skills so people can go out and take these skills and use them on their own. And that's really one of the main goals is for women who have never been exposed to these things. You know, a lot of times, and in my own experience, I found that, you know, I had never been hunting, and I don't know anyone, you know, have any good friends that hunt. So when I first went to Bow many years ago, I took hunting classes, and I was afraid to touch a gun. You know, I never touched a gun. And so I took the intro to firearm safety, and there were guns with all the dangerous parts removed, and you could touch them and play with them and throw them around, and you could never get hurt. And I just felt so comfortable, and that's how instruction is approached, in a really fun and safe and hands-on way.
That sounds like a wonderful description. So this is the Bow Workshop, and I want to ask Christine Wall what she particularly liked. Which course did you take last year that was special?
Well, I took four different classes last year. I took field dressing a deer, deer hunting skills, chainsaw, and wild edibles. And I've yet to go deer hunting, but I plan to sometime in the future. But I was lucky enough to be able to use my wild edible skills many times this summer. A lot of the things we collected on the beach, I learned and made a few people's salads with them afterwards.
Oh, and then
I also helped some friends cut up some wood for their winter stove use. So it was all pretty applicable and pretty interesting stuff.
Great. So it was an introduction, and as Michelle said, it covered the safety, but it also gave you, you learned what you could do and learned some good basic skills, and now you're even better at it, right?
Yep. And another thing I really liked was being out at Echo Ranch, I think, is really cool. Even just walking, the first thing we do, I guess, to as an orientation is just walk all the way out to the camp. And I think that's a really fun introduction to being outside.
Absolutely. It's usually a great weekend to be at Echo Ranch in the middle of May. And I wanted to ask Rebecca Parks what class she particularly liked.
Well, you know, it's funny. Christine and I took almost all the same classes. It's one of the ways we both ended up here today, which is another really great perk of the weekend, is that you're spending it with 80 women from Juneau that are interested in gaining outdoors skills and meeting other people in that community. So you're building the people that you know that really appreciate where we live and the things that we can do where we live. And I love that. And I did meet new people and make new friends just in that short weekend. And similarly, I got to field dress a deer, which was amazing. And, you know, it wasn't a beautiful weekend. It was pouring rain and freezing cold. But, you know, I'm still signed up to do it again, and it was worth it. I remember my hands being white because they were so cold, but dipped into a deer. And I learned it, and it's the right way to learn how to love being outdoors, because it's not always going to be a bright, sunny day.
Absolutely. So, Michelle, we've talked about this as being for people who feel like they're real beginners in the outdoors, but also isn't it aimed at people who know some of these skills, but others of the classes would be a stretch?
Definitely. There are 27 classes that are being offered this year, and just some of those classes are things like crabbing, so going out on a boat and learning how to pull crab pots. And another one, like we mentioned, was chainsaw. There's kayaking. One of our new classes this year, which I'm really excited about, is alpaca rafting. So we're going to have some alpaca rafts, which are rafts that fold up. You put in your backpack, they're about 5.5 pounds. And so we're teaching people how to pack them up in your backpack. You're going to hike up Cowie Creek, learn how to unpack and blow them up, and raft down the creek, which will be so fun. It's really an exciting one. So there's such a wide variety. And, you know, we have some of the ones we've had every year, like rifle and archery, which are always popular, and spin casting and fly fishing and smoking, pickling, grablock salmon. I'm sure in Juneau there are some women that are experts at every one of these classes. There must be. You know, we have such amazing women in Juneau. However, I would say 90% of us have a few classes that we've never done, you know, what we're teaching. So it's worth it for people to check out.
Excellent. And can you tell me who sponsors this wonderful weekend?
Sure. It's the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Outdoor Heritage Foundation. And it's actually a national and international program. So this happens in states all over the country and in a few other countries. But here in Alaska, we have those two main sponsors.
All right. Thank you. Are there any Beyond Bow events scheduled for Juneau this year?
No, we don't have any scheduled this year. We've done it a few years in the past, and we're always open to ideas. So if people have something in particular, we could definitely schedule those. There are often Beyond Bow around the state, and you can find that at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. So there might be things going on in other parts of the state that people could attend if they wanted to.
Thank you. And would you give us some details about how to register and the bus transportation piece of it?
Sure, yes. I don't think I even mentioned when the workshop is, so let me start with that. So it's May 16th through 18th. It's Friday to Sunday. And so participants will leave in the morning, and we have a bus that goes out early. It's about 8 to 8:30 in the morning, and you head out to Echo Ranch, and then your gear is all transported for you by boat, but then you hike out to the camp. It's about a 45-minute hike, pretty easy along the beach. And if people have accessibility issues, we can take them out on a boat too, so you don't have to hike. But then once you get there, you take a class on Friday afternoon, and you have two classes on Sunday and one or Saturday and one on Sunday. And you head back about 4 o'clock. Again, you hike back and then take the bus back. And so it's $250 for the weekend, and that includes all meals, lodging, gear for classes, equipment, transportation. So, and it's you know, supported by, as I mentioned, ADF&G and the Outdoor Heritage Foundation, so it helps to keep the price pretty low for everybody. And if people would like to register, as I mentioned, it's opened up April 1st, and it's a good idea to register soon because we've been filling up really fast, and the sooner the earlier you get your registration information and the better chance you have of getting your first choice classes. So it's always a good idea to do it quickly. So what you can do is you can call Sandy O'Brien at 465-6196, or you can email, and this is a long email address, it's at dfg.dwc.southeastbow@alaska.gov. And if you can't remember that email address, if you get on the Fish and Game website, you can search around and you'll find the information you need.
Right. So it's Fish and Game, and the whole workshop is called Becoming an Outdoors Woman. And I wondered if Rebecca could tell us a little bit about the camping facilities. Did you bring a sleeping bag?
We did bring sleeping bags, but we're in cabins, and they even have, I think they were wood stoves in the cabins.
Yeah.
And the meals were great, and we really got treated well by the Echo Ranch staff.
And really true, the meals really are good. Yeah. I still can't believe it every year, but the food is really delicious.
Yeah, there's a selling point for the weekend. Yes.
And there's even a castle out there.
All right, there's a castle. So if you'd like to get your hands on a chainsaw or learn more about survival and spend a weekend with great people, both the students and the instructors, there's an opportunity. May 16th through the 18th at Echo Ranch is Becoming an Outdoors Woman. And we talked about how to find out about it. Registration has opened. If you get to the Fish and Game website, you'll find information about it, and there are some posters around town too. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
I woke up this morning, frozen nearly dead, so goddamn cold I couldn't get out of bed. As I lay there shivering, as cold as I could be, suddenly a revelation came to me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, and all night long stoke her fire, yes we. I put a hat down at the co-op, I notice I'm stumped. I don't care if she's skinny and I don't care if she's plump. I don't care if she's pretty or ugly as sin. But if she's got a chainsaw, she can move right in. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, and all night long, stoke her fire, yes, me. Kind of gentle, but we would never fight. If she went out with other guys, I wouldn't get uptight. If she could just do her thing, I could just do mine. For her and me and that machine, we'd get along just fine. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw.
And I'll be talking to you. Hello, Barbara Scheinberg. Welcome to the studio.
Yes, I think I've been here before. I'm happy to be back.
Great. We've brought you in today about the Juneau Economic Plan. And also welcome to Jim Calvin.
Thank you.
So I understand that this plan is in process and there's a public participation event. So go ahead and tell me about it.
That's correct. Big event tomorrow night. How about Barb give us some of the details about that?
Yeah, well, it's from 7 to 9 p.m. over at Centennial Hall. And it should be, I hope, one of the most interesting meetings that we've had for a little while here. Not only will there be some very interesting and I think surprising information about the Juneau economy, but we're really at the stage where we're doing a lot of listening, and we have some important questions that we want to ask people to weigh in on.
This is part of a much larger effort, the Juneau Economic Development Planning Process, which is a year-long effort that we're doing for the City and Borough of Juneau. Public engagement, public process, community engagement in general is a critical part of this process. So in addition to the community meeting tomorrow night, we're also conducting a telephone survey as we speak, and we'll be doing that survey here for another 10 days or so. There'll be here in the next few weeks, there'll be an online survey and a business survey. So lots of engagement with the community, and it really kicks off with our meeting tomorrow night.
All right. And you've put up some posters about it, and I understand that when you're taking the input, you've got this technological advance, because didn't it say bring my cell phone and leave it on?
Yeah, we'll turn the ringer off. But it should be really fun. We have we'll be able to get a quick pulse on who's really in the audience, so that'll be interesting. And then also ask people some questions about some of the data, just to see, well, how many small businesses do they think there are in Juneau, and what do they think is happening with wages here? But also then really ask some bigger picture questions about the economy and where they want to go. And people actually can text or tweet or go online. You can bring your computer or iPad also. And any of those ways will let you participate in the poll. And the results will be instantaneous in front of you on the screen. And it's so pretty cool.
That does sound like an interesting technique that I haven't seen in our meetings here before. Does Juneau have an economic plan in place at the moment?
We do not, and haven't for a very, very long time. In fact, you can look through the bowels of the city library or any library and not find an economic development plan. So that's what's particularly fun about this effort, is it's been a very long time and it's long overdue, and I think there's plenty of good reasons for us to be doing this now. And actually the first step in the process of economic development planning is to really dig into the local economy and see what's going on, what's driving it, what the latest trends are, where we're headed in the absence of any proactive economic development effort. And that's an effort that's underway. We'll be reporting some of what we've learned tomorrow night.
Ah, so this is, mm-hmm. You've already started on some of that, searching through the statistics.
That's correct, yes, yeah.
Great.
And we think it's fascinating, but we also think that the folks that show up at the meeting will think it's pretty cool information as well.
Okay. Do you expect to address infrastructure?
I'm sure that infrastructure will come up. As I said, we're both reporting on sort of what is the state of Juneau right now and how did it get here, a bit of that, but also really listening. And I'm sure we'll be hearing about infrastructure opportunities among many other things.
Economic development includes a lot of, it's a many faceted thing. It certainly is infrastructure development. It's also business retention, business expansion, business recruitment. It's labor force development. It's developing access to capital. It's you name it. It's a broad thing. And part of, we want to leave it broad now as well. We want people to be thinking very big picture, very creatively about what opportunities they might see, either from a household perspective or a business perspective or a community perspective, about what our opportunities are, what our barriers are, and what we can do to break down those barriers.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to echo something that Jim said, which is, I mean, that's one of the interesting things, is what does economic development or economic well-being mean to you? And that's one of the things we'll be talking about. People think about that differently. When folks close their eyes and think about Juneau 10 years from now, what should the economy be like and what would be success? People have different answers to that, and that's one of the things that we really want to get at tomorrow.
All right. You want to hear from people about their different ideas, and then you'll be collecting these responses and working them up into a report at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And lots of opportunities for folks to do that in addition to the meeting tomorrow. As I said, there's a random sample telephone survey, which 400 lucky citizens get to participate in, but then an online survey, which will be much the same instrument, will be available to everyone in the community to take it if they so choose. And there we have a Facebook page, and we have a website and
Twitter.
Yeah, so all kinds of ways to communicate with the project team about this.
Okay, and this project, now I wanted to clarify, Juneau Economic Development Plan?
Is the development right in there in the title of it?
Well, we call it JEP, the Juneau Economic Plan, just because it's a little pithier. And so yeah, it is the Juneau Economic Development Plan, but we're calling it JEP or Juneau Economic Plan.
Okay, and the big public meeting is tomorrow night. That's Thursday, 7 o'clock at Centennial Hall. And who would you say should come to this meeting?
Well, you know the answer to that. Everybody should come. I mean, we want students, we want retired people, we want working people of every type. I mean, you know, there's really nobody that shouldn't come to this meeting.
Absolutely. For-profit business people, nonprofit managers, and government folks, it's all part of our economy. So we want everyone to show up.
And I imagine you want people who've been in Juneau for a while and also newcomers, because that perspective, you know, that first year you watch things in Juneau can be really different than the 10th or 30th year.
And that is a beautiful part of the mix that we hope to get in some of the conversations tomorrow night, because when you have that diversity of view, you know, that's when the creative thinking happens.
All right. So this is an opportunity for input from the people, and it's going up to CBJ, which is our local municipal government, tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Is there a website for the project yet?
Yes, there is.
Okay, and how would we find that?
JuneauEconomicPlan.org.
All right. And so I hope you've been made curious about what these folks are finding out about our city and what we can think of as what we want in the future. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Your money doesn't care about you. Just look at what it puts you through. You spend all that time chasing nickels and dimes. Then one fine day you're surprised to find you're dressed up in your Sunday best, laid out for your eternal rest. And all the money over which you have sweated and bled doesn't even know you're dead. Money makes you big and money makes you small. Money gets you high, money breaks the fall. Money blows your horn and money makes you crawl. Your money's got you right where it wants you. Money tells you what you want to hear. It whispers funny ideas in your ear, like how much better you are than the other guy, so you deserve a bigger piece of the pie. It says that you're a king among pawns. It tells you you can do no wrong. It says there was never anybody half as clever as you, and you're just dumb enough to think it's true. Money makes you big and money makes you small. Money gets you high, money breaks the fall. Money blows your horn and money makes you crawl. Your money's got you right where it wants you. Money, what we would not do to sweeten up the pot. Money, who we would not screw to get more than we've got. Money, it's the stuff of dreams, the tail that wags the dog. A perfect substitute for brains or taste or God. Money makes you big and money makes you small. Money gets you high, money breaks the fall. Money blows your horn and money makes you crawl. Your money's got you right where it wants you. You can't say it ain't so, but you know that it's true. Your money doesn't care about you.
Music from T.R. Ritchie, wonderful songwriter from the Puget Sound area. He came up to Juneau last couple of years.
And over on KTOO, the Juneau Clean Air Coalition is answering telephones. That's because this is Pledge Week. We are collecting promises of membership support for the three radio stations here in town. And those volunteers, the Clean Air Coalition, who meet monthly to plan a future smoke-free Juneau and smoke-free Alaska. Members represent schools, public health, Alaska Native health, addiction, state workers, community members at large, and they're in there doing their part. Here I have a brand new book in my hands. It's called Once Upon Alaska, a Kid's Photo Book. And I got to say, it's gorgeous. And it's new. And it has photographs by Mark Kelly, words by Nick Jans, design by Heidi Reifenstein. It makes it a pretty local publication. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Anne.
This is a pretty nice book, don't you think?
We had a lot of fun putting it together. Both Nick and I have been collaborating on a number of books over the years, and we've been talking about a kid's book for maybe 4 or 5 years, trying to figure out how to do this, and this is, last year we said, let's do it, and this is the result.
All right.
Yeah, you know, it took me 9 books to get up the nerve to finally write a kid's book, because kids are the toughest audience there is. They know what's good and what's not, and it's definitely the emperor's new clothes kind of deal. They're going to say what they think.
I see. So you were
intimidated is a fair way to put it.
Intimidated, Mr. Chan.
Kids are smart. I was a school teacher.
Okay. And so that was Nick Jans. He wrote the words for this, which are marvelous, short, pithy, poetic lines. The cover photo is Marjorie Glacier, a tidewater glacier out of Glacier Bay. And the words say, "Great river of ice flows through the land, carving peaks with icy hand." And I was marveling at how lovely the words are and how they change from page to page. I think of you, Nick, as an essay writer. So I know you carefully choose your words to describe things. How did the poetry writing go?
Well, actually, I went to the University of Washington Graduate School of Writing to study writing poetry. First thing I ever published and got paid for was poetry. That was in Rolling Stone magazine. It was a different kind of deal. But my parents read to me, Rudyard Kipling, Shakespeare, Longfellow, Wordsworth, Coleridge, you name it. And I grew up hearing that, and my mom was a musician too, so I always had the music of words going in my head, and I've been rhyming things, which is, of course, not really in vogue in modern poetry, although with kids, you know, making couplets, which is what I'm doing here, is a very, very old form of poetry going back to pre-Chaucer. But it's very easy to write bad verse and very hard to write good verse. And it took me a hell of a long time to come up with those, 300 words in the whole book? And it took me close to a year to think of them all.
I see. Well, I think the work paid off. It's really wonderful language. And now, Mark, these photographs you've carefully selected, I think, from how many years of photographs?
The one of Wonder Lake and Denali with two moose in its crossing. I shot my second year I was in Alaska, which was 1976. I was a student at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, a photojournalism student. And so it spans a large portion of my life, and some of my pictures of my kids in there, they happened to be in there because that's who I shot, and I wanted to put kids in the kids book, and they were 7 or 8 in those pictures, and they're now 25 and 27. So it's a long span of pictures, including 3 or 4 pictures I shot last summer. So from 76 to 90,
213,
yes.
Yeah. Well, I think also that the photographs, some of them are very familiar to those of us who've seen some other books or calendars, and others are different, but they're all strikingly beautiful.
And thank you.
The design of this is that the photographs, I'll try to explain this to the radio audience, the photographs are printed edge to edge. There's no margin. And so I was particularly struck as I turned through it about the color and the tonality of each photograph. As you turn the pages, for instance, the moose in the forest, there is green all over that page. And then the next one is a lovely indoor cabin scene in Gustavus, which has just a golden light to it. And so artistically, this seems like be very rewarding for children, and it's a great artistic expression.
Well, thank you. Actually, when I was doing this book sometime earlier this summer, when we were finally nailing down the pictures, or whenever we got to it, I forget exactly, Nick went through all, you know, there's 25 pictures, I probably had 50 or 60 pictures, and he sat down and said, I want pictures with stories, you know, and the picture had to, it's easier to write with a story than just a scenic, so it was the stories behind it. And it's a very tight, I mean, I think there's like 14 words average per page. It's very...
Oh, they're just, yes, just short, very evocative phrases, couplets. A world of ice, a world of snow, a plane up high with far to go. And then for those of us who really do like stories and even more words, there is, at the very back, the Alaska Fun and Factoids, where a little thumbnail, we'd call them thumbnails on the computer.
Yes, thumbnails, yes.
Yes. Thumbnails of the photographs and explanations, some of where the pictures came from or what's in the picture. And I got to say, this is great for Alaskans, the map. Under Alaskan Fun, behind the text is a map of Alaska, the whole map of Alaska. The next page has all of the lower 48 plus Alaska on one map, geographically in the right place. So that's good, Mark Kelly. I do not have to report this book to the senator. Yes. And this was a collaborative project.
I would like to acknowledge Heidi Reifenstein, who grew up in Juneau, whose mom runs Hearthside Books, and was an art student and went on and got a master's or in art. And I, when I was picking designer, since I'm the publisher, I picked the writer, and Nick's my go-to guy. And I wanted a designer. I was thinking she's a young mom and a different graphic sense than me, who has a child and would be thinking about designing this and how would my child want to see this. And I wanted a fun type and a type that flowed and moved with the pictures, and Heidi did just a wonderful job.
And it was very much a in terms of collaboration, it was a very much a three-way process where, there were times when Heidi would come up with something and we'd look at it and talk about it and think about how it served the photograph, mm-hmm. how it worked with the words themselves and emphasized, you know, if the emphasis was in the right place or if something was distracting. Everything had to work together. And, of course, Mark is at the center of the project, and it really was up to him to make the final hard calls. And I think the way the whole final project worked is a testament to his good judgment in the end, because there are some things that I really had to fight for. And he said, no, that's not, you know. And I said, yes, it is. Or when he's, you know, when the other way around, there was lots of give and take.
Lots of give and take.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and the interesting thing is I'm a kind of a purist in photography. I don't want type on my pictures. I want pictures to stay clean, and so it was the thought of putting type all over pictures. So you have to use the type, but the type has to also respect the photo, and that's a really interesting compromise on how to do that, and I hope it succeeded. I enjoy the type on the pictures.
Oh, and that's quite an admission coming from a photographer, I know. So the book is out, and now we have some events. First Friday. You guys are doing First Friday?
We're going to be at the Juno Artist Gallery in the Senate Building from 4:30 to like 7:30 or whatever that First Friday timing is. And sure. And I think Heidi's going to be there also.
Oh, great. And so you'll have the books there. We might be able to get them signed.
Of course. And Nick will be there. I'll be there for sure. I think Heidi's going to be there. I'm not sure.
Oh, that'd be great to see all three of you.
And then on Saturday, we're going to be at Hearthside Books. And it's going to be like old homecoming for Heidi because she used to work there. As a kid growing up in Juneau, she was behind the counter, so now she'll be out in front of the counter, so it should be fun for her. But we're 10 to 2 there.
I think that's in the Valley?
That's in the Valley.
So Hearthside in the Valley on Saturday, downtown for First Friday at Juneau Artist Gallery. Our local photographer and author working together on something new, a kid's book. Thanks so much for coming in, Nick.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome, Mark.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 2nd of April, 2014. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote, "If civilization had been left in female hands, we'd all still be living in grass huts." The author Camille Paglia. Born in Endicott, New York, 1947, Camille Paglia, a self-described feminist who was very critical of feminism, who wrote, "Let's get rid of infirmary feminism with its bedlam of bellyachers, anorexics, bulimics, depressives, rape victims, and incest survivors. Feminism has become a catch-all vegetable drawer where bunches of clingy sob sisters can store their moldy neuroses." It's the birthday of the world's most famous womanizer, Giacomo Casanova, born in Venice in 1725. He was a librarian to a Bohemian count in 1789 when he set out to write his memoirs. 12 volumes, 3,500 pages, entitled Story of My Life, about all of his romantic liaisons, but also the best record there is of 18th century society and its customs. It's the birthday of Hans Christian Andersen, born in 1805 in the town of Odense, Denmark, moved to Copenhagen at the age of 14, hoping to become an actor, wanted to be a playwright. He was an inveterate traveler and wrote travelogues. But it's for his three collections of fairy tales that he's best known. Never mastered writing in the formal Danish style, so he wrote in the everyday language of the common people. Many of his fairy tales were very dark, very violent, very scary. His personal life, a succession of unrequited longings for women, including the singer Jenny Lind, occasionally longings for men, never married. And in his honor, his birthday was declared International Children's Book Day. And it's the birthday of Zola, Emile Zola, born in Paris in 1840, who developed a writing style he called naturalism, which he defined as nature seen through a temperament. Between 1871 and 1893, he wrote a 20-novel series called Les Rougon-Macquart, about a family during the Second Empire. The most famous books from the cycle were The Drunkard, Nana, and Germinal. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, Holding On to Benjamin. No use to tell him that he and the raccoon are brothers. You have your soft ideas about nature, he has others, and they are full of his white teeth and lip that curls sometimes horribly. You love this earnest dog, but also you admire the raccoon, and Lord help you in your place of hope and improbables to the black masked gray one. Run, you say, and just as urgently to the dog, stay, and he won't or he will, depending on more things than I could name. He's sure he's right, and you, so tangled in your mind, are wrong, though patient and pacific, and you are downcast, and it's his eyes, not yours, that are clear and bright. A poem by Mary Oliver, Holding On to Benjamin, from her collection Dog Songs, published by Penguin, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Also supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that's been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming support comes from T.K. McGuire's in the Prospector Hotel, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and providing catering from coffee service to receptions and events. More information at T.K. McGuire's, 586-3737.
Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Ann Fuller. It's 3:46, and you know, this is a week with a first Friday in it. And our guest right now is Arthur Starbuck. And he's going to tell us about Morally Impoverished plan for this week.
Well, I was going to talk about my kid's book. I've come out with a kid's book. It's called I Didn't Do It. It's about how to go from lying to your parents to lying on stage and parlaying that whole thing into an improv career, really.
Well, but, I'm sure you're qualified to write that book, too.
But in addition to that, in addition to my upcoming children's book, which is only pictures, no words. We're going to have a three-ring improv here downstairs first Friday, this Friday, from 6:30 to 8:30. And that's going to be $10 at the door, $5 if you come through the skylight. Legal notice, at 360 does not have a skylight.
Thank you.
Okay.
Those are the details. Now, what can the audience expect?
I don't know, because it's improv. We won't know what we're going to do until after we've done it. So I could come back next week and tell you what we did do, but we have some plans. We're going to do a five things where we have five things and we do them. We're going to do Rorschach Pattern 9 is going to perform, which is myself and Eric Caldwell, and that involves bouffant clowning and post-Dadaist poetry, and we're also going to do perhaps some games from our. This is our 10th anniversary, so we're going to be doing some of the games that we started doing back when we had five members, and we're going to be doing it with two or three or less members.
Okay, so this sounds like a performance from Morally Impoverished. What else can I say about it? I was going to ask how you got involved with this troupe or how you invented it. Maybe that's better.
I was standing there minding my own business and put on the Lysistrata project, which involved 3-foot stuffed penises. And other people were putting together this improv thing, and they said, that guy, he'll probably do it. And it was a lot of training. I was very bad and spoke into my chest for the first six months. But, they trained me up and let me loose, and we started back in 10 years ago.
10 years.
And we've had about 24 members over the 10 years.
Sounds great.
And now I keep quitting. I keep quitting, and they say, no, he's not quitting. That's a sabbatical. And they keep dragging me back.
I see. And we definitely have you for this week.
Yes.
Oh, good.
I'm going to be there or one of my alter egos.
Ugly either. Joe might show up.
Ugly Joe, possibly. I would not be in the least surprised if Dr. Arthur Winchester Candelabra, Wenceslas, Armageddon, Ricardo Dingleberry shows up, who's also...
I see, another character that has been seen.
Yes.
The show is at the 360 Studio in the K3 building.
We're very excited about...
You get to come to the...
For the first time, we're going to have chicken races, there'll be a petting zoo, there's going to be jello wrestling. I mean, I was really impressed that they let us in here. So it's going to be quite fun.
Quite fun. For more information, find yourself a poster for the Morally Impoverished 10th Anniversary Show, or a guide to First Friday. It's a First Friday event. Or you can go to the K2.org website, because we put events at 360 right up there.
And we're going to be doing all of the things we can't do at the Alaska State Improv Festival, which is happening at the end of the month from the 24th to the 27th. Mm-hmm. We're going to be bringing in people from all across America. And there's going to be, you know, a lot of pressure for us performing in front of these people who are, some of them, rather famous. So we're going to do the things that we can't do there, we're going to be doing Friday night.
All right. So we're lucky enough to have a First Friday performance, and building up to, at the end of the month, the State Festival of Improvisation. Well, thank you very much, Arthur Starrett.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Of all the birds that turn up at bird feeders, chickadees, ever perky, smartly dressed in black and white, are favorites, and they're instantly recognizable as chickadees. Yet sometimes we have to ask ourselves, which chickadee is it? In the eastern and central states, for example, there are two species. Mostly, they seem to divide up by latitude. Black-capped chickadees pervade the northern half of the region, and Carolina chickadees, the southern half. But in some places, they overlap, and while the two look nearly identical, their voices give them away. Black-capped chickadees sing a sweet, whistled 2 to 3 notes, the first a bit higher. In contrast, Carolina chickadees usually sing more notes, and all at different or alternating pitches, such as... Here they are again, the sweet black-capped song. Now, the Carolina chickadee song. With a little listening practice, you'll find that the birds' contact calls sound different, too. Black-capped chickadees actually seem to say chickadee, while Carolinas blurt their name much faster and at a higher pitch. So, while you watch those feeders, keep your ears tuned. Today's show was made possible by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hi, this is Heather Bryant, webmaster here at K2. Each month we construct an online First Friday art guide with pictures and descriptions of gallery openings and events. We've gotten positive feedback on the guide and enjoy providing this service to our listeners and web users. If you're an artist or business owner, please send your picture and brief description to arts@ktoo.org. And don't forget to use the guide as you make your First Friday plans.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. This is Ann Foley, your host. And so we're going to speak to Eagle Crest about what's going on up on the mountain.
Good afternoon, Ann.
Hi, Jeffra. Thanks for talking with us.
Hey, sure.
What are conditions like up there?
Well, we're expecting a nice day or nice weekend on the mountain. We are closed tomorrow, Thursday, but we're open Friday through Sunday this weekend, and then we have two more days, the next Saturday and Sunday, the 12th and 13th, for our final weekend of the season. So it is winding down quickly.
Yes. So we're saying you're open Friday through Sunday. Is there any bus service?
There is bus service. The snow bus will run on Saturday and Sunday this weekend and Saturday and Sunday next weekend. And we have a host of events on our last 5 days of our operation, actually the last 4 days of operation. So Saturday is our first time ever doing this event, but it's Hope on the Slopes Ski and Ride for a Cure, and it's a fundraiser for the American Cancer Society. And registration for that is at 8 o'clock in the morning in the Eagle Crest Day Lodge. And you can find out more information on that at skijuno.com. But we're inviting everybody to come on out and help us raise some money for the American Cancer Society and help us do away with cancer. Then also on Saturday, we have the sometimes annual Bill Tugman race, and that's going to be at the top of Eagle. And then on Sunday, we have the Great Alaskan Terrain Park Series, our wild caught salmon, what are they calling it? Wild caught salmon bank slalom race, I think. That is a mouthful, Anne.
It's all, that does sound like a mouthful. I think I focused on the fact that it's a slalom.
Yes, it's a bank slalom, and that's going to be on Sunday, and I'm not going to try and repeat that again. But you can find information on that at skijuno.com. And then the last weekend of the season, Saturday, April 12th, we'll have our annual Slush Cup. And Sunday, April 13th, our final day of the season, we're going to have our Porcupine Extravaganza. So there's a lot of great events going on up in the mountain. You can find out more on that at skijuno.com. And five more days left in the season, so you don't want to miss any of them.
No, we're counting those days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, there are races and extravaganzas and fundraisers, but mostly they're still skiing at Eagle Crest. It's springtime and it's wonderful.
That is correct. And so we invite everybody to come on up. And if you haven't been up this season, well, now's the time.
Absolutely. It's not too late.
It is not too late.
All right, Jeffra. Thank you very much for talking with us.
All right. Thank you, Anne. Bye now.
Goodbye. You are listening to KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. K2 also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens at K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT surfs Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear K2 on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive K2 on GCI Cable Channel, Cable Juneau, Digital Channel 871. KRNN can be heard at Digital Channel 872. KXLL is at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Thursday on Juneau Afternoon, Jonas Strausser will be hosting. Talk with time machinist Cal Giordano. Aaron Fulton about Alaska's community-supported fishery. We'll learn about this month's Healing Arts exhibit. Kyle Pickett will be here to highlight this weekend's Juno Symphony performances. Nancy DeCherney will be here for Arts Up. All those, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. That'll be Thursday on a Juno afternoon. Tonight at 7, Forum at 360, Mary Miller's presentation on the Ukraine. Weather. Slight chance of rain early in the evening, then rain and snow likely. Snow accumulation up to 2 inches, lows around 33, east wind to 10. Thursday mostly cloudy, Thursday night partly cloudy. This has been Juno Afternoon, and I'm Ann Fuller.